Welcome to Safety Chats. Host Jason Stark, Director of Safety at Baldwin Safety and Compliance, shares decades of aviation experience and a passion for safety. Let's get started with this week's Safety Chat.
You always heard the one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all. You always take the sweetest rose and crush it till the petals fall. You always break the kindest heart with a hasty word you can't recall. So if I broke your heart last night, it's because I love you most of all.
Oh, that was a sweet melody indeed. Sweet melody. The year was 1944. That was the number one song playing for the masses. It's the Mills Brothers, You Always Hurt the One You Love. But 1944, 3 years since we had been thrust into World War II. It was about a year left of the Great World War II. And importantly, in 1944, the United States invited 52 states to the balmy city of Chicago, and I say that kind of facetiously, in October, with the goal of hammering out an agreement so that they could level the playing field for aviation across the world. Hey everybody, this is Jason with Baldwin Safety Chat Podcast. Thank you so much for joining. This is where we talk about all things safety management, safety in general, organizational behavior, organizational dynamics. We just cover the full spectrum of things. Just some interesting topics, at least to me. Unless you weigh in and you want to talk about something else, please let me know. But some interesting topics that hopefully can help us do our jobs just a little bit better. So where were we? We were in 1944. The United States had invited 52 countries to Chicago in October to hammer out this agreement, if you will, this kind of framework to increase collaboration and cooperation for air navigation across the globe. And why? Why? Well, in World War II, as you know, we were using aircraft to transport all kinds of things, troops, supplies, more nefarious side bombs, but over long distances to support the war and also to fight the war. And what these visionaries, these 52 countries in the United States, what they thought was that once the war was over, and it was winding down, about another year left, what they saw is that air travel could become huge. It could unite the globe. It could make things easier and better, if you will, by bringing people together much more quickly. But the problem is the forefront, and if you read document 7300, which is the Chicago Convention, especially the preamble, it talks a lot about peace and security. Because what they saw is if there wasn't standardization in air navigation and global travel, that could actually lead to conflict between two countries. And how is that? Well, you could have one country that makes it really easy to get into because they really want the business, and you got another country that doesn't have the financial means to support air travel, or they don't have the regulatory know-how, and one country would be at an advantage over another, and they'd probably get upset, and you know what, people in countries get upset at each other. It kind of usually leads to conflict. So what they wanted to do was standardize the playing field. And that's the way I always looked at it. They wanted to standardize the playing field because could you imagine going from one country to another and the aviation infrastructure and regulatory infrastructure being wildly different? I mean, I know now when we travel to other countries, there are slight differences, like transition levels and barometric settings and whatever. There are some differences now, but generally speaking, we're all kind of on the same page. Like when it comes to runway numbers, when it comes to nav aids, so on and so forth, we're kind of all on the same page. So that really facilitates global navigation. And it facilitates us being able to do that somewhat efficiently and effectively. But if you didn't have that standardization, it would be super difficult. And can you imagine what the cockpit of an airplane would look like if there was different approach aids and nav aids across the world? Each one had their own different type. We would have to have a stack of radios that probably circled the airplane. Who knows? I don't know. But to me, I think that would be kind of a nightmare if we weren't standardized. So standardization is the big thing. But what I want to talk about a little bit today is in the vein of interface management. Now, if any of you have read the NPRM, interface management was introduced. And it's not the first time it's introduced. It was actually in document 9859, fourth edition. And I believe the third edition, too. I'd have to go back and look. But this idea of interface management looks at controlling risk across where two entities interface. And on the smaller scale, it could be like your organization interfacing with an MRO. Now, the things that the MRO does or does not do can lead to risk into your operations. Now, think about it. When you interface with the MRO, basically when you take your plane there, your aircraft there, or your helicopter, if they're having issues, if they're a sick organization, if they don't have certain controls in place, like, for example, tool control, fatigue, risk management, so on and so forth, those problems can become your problems in the terms of incomplete or insufficient maintenance, tools left behind in the aircraft, which could lead to issues. It could lead to incorrect maintenance, errors, whatever. That becomes your problem. So when ICAO looked at countries participating in global navigation, they saw that the problems in a regulatory structure or the lack of certain regulations could lead to issues in other countries. So think about it. An airline, a flagship, say, of the United States, let's say the United States didn't have certain regulations and rules, could end up becoming the problem of another country, especially if that U.S. flag carrier had an accident in that company and ended up hurting the citizens of that other country. So let's talk about international travel. What is international travel? When you look at what ICAO says, international travel, obviously over the open seas, that's where ICAO standards apply. But when you go from one sovereign state, capital S, one sovereign state like the United States to another sovereign state, such as France, that is international travel, right? Or even from the United States, a sovereign state, to Mexico, which is another sovereign state. And so you go state to state, that's international travel. So you see that international travel is from one sovereign state to another. But here's the other issue. If you are a registered operator in one state operating in another state, that is also considered international operations. Because even if you're stationed there, so for example, if you have a U.S. registered helicopter supporting firefighting efforts in Canada and the helicopter is based there, that is considered international operations according to the ICAO definition. Now, when we do international operations, the one thing we don't want to do, or what ICAO is concerned about, is that bringing the issues or lack of risk controls or insufficient risk controls or degraded risk controls into another country. So in essence, ICAO not only standardized the playing field, they also wanted to protect each nation from each other, hence why they had global standards. And this is where I see safety management coming in. Because if you look at safety management in Annex 19, it talks about those operators engaged in international operations shall have an SMS. Well, actually, it states that the state shall develop and implement regulations for aircraft operators engaging in international operations shall have a safety management system, or they're to implement the regulations for them. So what does that do? Think about that. What does that do when you have a U.S. operator commercial operators. So states shall develop and implement regular SMS regulations for international commercial operators. And you'll notice that Annex 6 Part 1 is international commercial operators. Annex 6 Part 2 is international general aviation operations. They're really concerned about the international. Here's why. And this is why safety management is a big deal for international commercial operators, is because if I'm a commercial operator, say like an airline or a charter company, yes, U-135s, you are considered a commercial operator. And if you go from one sovereign state to another or operate in another sovereign state, you are an international commercial operator. So think about this. What is one way that ICAO can help prevent one operator that's traveling to another sovereign state, how can it help it prevent it bringing its own dirty laundry into that state? And that's a safety management system. So the safety management system, as you know, is designed to identify and reduce risk in operations. So if I have a mechanism in place, i.e. countries or other states, capital S states, is that I have a mechanism in place to reduce risk. So therefore, I will not be bringing a bunch of risk into your nation, your area of operation, your state, because that's what it's all about. It's that interface. So when we travel, for example, let's say I get into my Challenger and I blast off and go to, England, for example. That's obviously international operations, but if I have issues in my organization because I do not understand the risk in my system and I've got systemic issues and latent issues, those latent issues could trigger while I am in England and end up causing a problem for that nation. And that's exactly what ICAO does not want to do. If I am a helicopter operator stationed in another state, capital S, another country, sovereign country. That is one thing I should really put the big asterisk here, is that assuming that all these states are ICAO signatories, which 192, I believe, are. So it's pretty hard to find a state in the world that isn't an ICAO signatory. But anyway, this applies to ICAO signatories. But if I'm an operator, let's say I'm a helicopter operator operating in Canada, I'm a U.S. registered helicopter operating in Canada helping to support firefighting. Think about if I had issues, if my helicopter company had issues and I didn't have a safety management system in place to help identify and mitigate those issues, then I'm bringing those issues with me to Canada. And again, that's exactly what ICAO was trying to prevent. So you see, the SMS is probably the greatest, grandest, widest scope interface management on the globe in reference to what ICAO is trying to do. And that is what I believe why they apply to international operators, because that always made me scratch my head. Because like I said, in Annex 19, it says for operators, those that operate aircraft internationally shall have a safety management system, or they should develop and implement regulations for operators that operate internationally. And it's like, what if I don't operate internationally? What if I operate just purely domestically? And ICAO doesn't address that, because they're like, it's in your borders. If you want your own dirty laundry affecting inside your borders, that's your business, because you are a sovereign nation. But the minute that you have somebody or an operator go from your nation to another nation, then we need to start taking that into account, that hey, if you got issues, even on the regulatory level, on the national level, if you've got problems, if your country has problems, if you have no control over your operators, if you have really weak safety regulations, and we've seen countries like this, and the United States has blacklisted, or I should say not blacklisted, but downgraded, that's a concern of ours. And we don't want you bringing that junk into other countries. Actually, countries also take a stance on that as well. So when they look at some states that have weak regulation, or weak resources, or have a history of operating carelessly or having poor operations with a lot of accidents, they downgrade them and they put extra controls in place as far as where they can fly, how often they can fly, and so on and so forth. But that safety management system, by me as a country saying, I have regulations in place for my operators that are going to travel to your country that require them to have a safety management system to identify and mitigate risk, that tells the other country, okay, fantastic, fantastic. You have these regulations that can help identify risk so they don't bring it into my country. And to me, friends, that's kind of a big deal. So when we sit here and ponder why is there safety management systems for international operators? We have to think about our neighbors, the other countries, across the pond, right to our south, right to our north, to the west, across the other pond. We have to think about our neighbors and the risk that we may be bringing to them. We don't want to bring our problems to them. We want to solve our problems, mitigate those problems before we go to another country so we can be good guests within their country. I hope that made sense. I hope that helps you to see that the safety management system, again, it's just a mechanism, but it helps to identify risk within the organizations and mitigate that risk so that we're not bringing it to other countries. Now, what about the fact that ICAO says nothing about just purely domestic operations? Well, then it's up to the state. And if the state wants to regulate safety management systems, even for purely domestic operations, that's up to them. You look in the case of the United States, even traveling interstate, we're protecting, if I travel from Chicago to Houston, I'm protecting Houstonians by having a safety management system from having any problems in my state. And that's state lower S. So you see, when it comes to interface management, when it comes from us going to another system or another area, we are protecting that area from our junk. And we are also telling, by implementing a safety management system and having it accepted or having it validated, that we're looking for our junk and we're trying not to bring it into your country. We don't want to cause problems in there because of our operations and the risk associated with it, and that we are cognizant of systemic issues and latent issues. And we are working to mitigate those, or we have mitigated them. So again, I hope that makes sense. I hope that's of value, just to kind of give another spin on the safety management system and the importance of the safety management system. So thanks for listening. You know what? If you like this podcast, let us know. You know, hit that like button. If you don't like it, well, you know what? Let us know anyway. And if you'd be so kind, tell us why you don't like it. Tell us what we can do better, because we want to be a source for you. We'd love to be the only source, but we know that's pie in the sky dreams. But we'd love to be a source for you to learn concepts and also help you think critically about some concepts of safety management, safety organizational behavior, again, to help us do our jobs better. So if you like it, let us know. If you don't, let us know. If you want us to talk about anything else here, drop me an email, jstark, and that's Stark with an E, at portside.co. Would love to hear from you either way, good, bad, or indifferent. And until then, I love you guys. Thank you so much for what you do. Stay safe.
This podcast is brought to you by Baldwin Safety and Compliance, the leader in safety management for the transportation industry. Since 2004, Baldwin has been providing state-of-the-art solutions and 24/7 support to the aviation and transportation industries. Baldwin's clients include all sizes and types of transportation operators. Baldwin provides safety and related business services to commercial and non-commercial transportation operators, medical transporters, FBOs, MROs, airports, flight schools, UAS operators, firefighters, OEMs, ground transport operators, and others. Visit BaldwinSMS.com to discover how Baldwin can enhance your organization's safety program.